Ladies and gentlemen, we gather you here today for the preparation for the biggest game of the season. It is the most important game of the year. Just that Johnny Mathis song, right? Christmas song that you hung him into yourself. Just drop in Conference USA Championship game, you know? I'm not going to do it for you. Just use your own imagination. Folks, it's the Mean Green Nation podcast, and we are here to talk to you about the most important game of the year. I know you've been thinking about bowl games. Well, don't. Think about this game. This is the only game that matters. You know, you've heard future Arizona State coach Herm Edwards say, you play to win the game. Well, you play the games to win the trophies. You play the games to win the hardware. The hardware is, that shiny, ugly Conference USA trophy there. But that's why you play it. You play it for the rings. You play it for the plaques. You play it for the recognition, for the printed vinyl on the stadium wall. This is what you play for. You play for conference championships. You're in the Conference USA. You win the title. You win the league title. You win the conference. This is what it's all about right here, folks. This is all you can ask for any season. The BCS is gone, right? College football playoff is a pipe dream. You just ask UCF or, Central Florida over there. Ask them, right? What can you play for every season? You can play for the conference championship. It is there in front of you. Easy as pie. The roads lay out. You beat all the West teams, and then you beat whoever they got out East. There's your path. Can you follow it? Can you reach the mountaintop? That's the question that will be asked of this North Texas team this weekend. And I am ready and excited to see them answer it. Mr. Aldo, how are you doing this evening? Are you hyped like me?
I'm hyped now that I listen to you. Got me going. I'm all for the Frisco Bowl or the New Orleans Bowl. Oh, wait. No, that's not what you're talking about. I'm super excited. It's amazing, you know, win or lose. I mean, I hope we win, and I don't want to take anything away from that. But we're in the freaking Conference USA Championship game. You know, after two seasons after being 1-11 and then 5-7, you know, we were 5-6. Then we got that APR little luck to get into a bowl game. Lose that one. 5-7. Makes it a little bit worse. But now we go 9-3 this season. We beat Army. We beat UTSA. We beat these teams that we weren't supposed to beat, according to me. Preseason, not according to Adam. He had us going 14-0. And we're heading into Boca Raton on Saturday or Friday, if you're the team. And
yeah,
I don't care what the outcome is. I mean, obviously I do, but for the purposes of this bit, I don't care what the outcome is. We're going to the championship game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Going to the championship game is an accomplishment in and of itself. It definitely has a shorter shelf life than actually winning the thing, right? I mean, just like last year, you were talking about the bowl game. When you say to people at that moment, like when it's November 2016 and you say, hey, North Texas was 1-11 last year and they're going bowling this year. You're like, wow, that's an accomplishment. Then they lose the bowl and you're going to say, hey, they were 1-11. You know, in 2015, 2016, they went bowling. They lost, but they went bowling, right? You add another year to that, and you're like, yeah, they were 1-11. They went, and you're like, okay, yeah, but what have they done now, right? Like, it doesn't really work so much. It has a shorter shelf life. It's cool. It's an accomplishment. I agree with everything that you said. I want the ones that have a longer shelf life. Like, remember we won the Conference USA title? Remember we were the champs? I want to say when we intro every Conference USA game next year, the champ is here. You know, the champ is here. Champion here, walking in.
I wonder if you ever call the athletic department and they'll be like, "You're number one North Texas Mean Green."
Yeah. Hey, 2017 Conference USA champions here. How may we direct your call? You know, that's what you got to do. That's, you know, you have to do that. Apparently, Bill Walton did that, right? He won the NBA Finals in 1987, 86, or something like that. And one of them, Maxwell, said that he would call him up and Bill Walton would answer, hey, Bill Walton, home of the 1986 NBA Finals champ. You know, he would. That's how you would answer the phone. But yeah, that's how you do it. Totally do it. They should do that every time. Hey, this is the Mean Green Radio Network, home of the 2017 North Texas Mean Green Conference champs. I mean,
you need to answer the phone like that. Mario Party 8 champion of January.
I mean, yeah, I do. It's like when it's game night, when we have board game night with our friends. Invite him over. I'm like, y'all want to get beat at Scrabble again? Because Scrabble King is here. Scrabble King wants to know, does anybody wants another beer? You know? Folks, yeah, again, this is what you play for, right? This is what you play for. And like, if you follow soccer, you hear them say all the time, like, we play for trophies. This is what we play for, silverware. Either, you know, top four finish doesn't mean anything. You don't get any trophies for that, right? You play for trophies. You play for silverware. So you put it on your shelf so you can, you know, look back at it and count them up. That's what you play for, man. This is it. And, yeah, I mean, I'd love a moral victory, a rivalry victory over, like, a SMU. But we got one over UTSA. We exercised the demons that were El Paso, the Hell Paso demons. You know, we beat Rice, too, at Rice. They had little demons there, too. Everybody in the West took care of them. Southern Miss, done. Louisiana Tech, done. Even though that was close or whatever. But, you know, all of them beat. And then we get a revenge game. It's the sweetest little situation there. Now, I ask you, the real question is what everybody tunes in for. What are our chances of winning this game?
Because of the superstitious person that I am.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is 81-0.
Okay. But let's say it was, you know, UNQ versus FAQ. And they were playing in the CUSB championship. You know, what would that score be? that was stupid.
It was terrible. Well, UN whatever has to play a perfect game, has to get turnovers, which is something that they haven't been great at, and convert those turnovers, stop the run, don't get pushed over in order to win this game.
I mean, I agree with you. It doesn't look good, and it doesn't look good because of this situation. Their primary focus, like, if you look at their offense is really simple. Our offense is really simple. Like, we run a handful of plays, like 10, 11 plays, and we just run them over and over from lots of different formations. We mix in a very different play every once in a while, but it's really the same routes from the same looks, slightly different looks just to change it up, but we do a lot of the same things. They have the same philosophy. They say, we're going to run a handful of plays really well at a tempo that you're not going to be able to stop it. And eventually, you're going to be so tired that, you know, it's a simple play. You're not going to be able to stop it. It's just going to be. It is a hyper version. Yeah, it's a hyper version of what old football philosophy used to be. I know we got a lot of people that listen to the show. They're like 21, and then they repeat that all the time. Like, I'm 21. Did I let you know that I was 21? I'm 21. And that, you know, that's what happens when you're 21. And so y'all don't remember some of the older football. And this is me. I finally get to give this speech. I don't know how many times this speech has been given to me, told at me. But are you ready for it, Aldo? Back in my day, football was, you know, running down your throat, you know?
It was played in the trenches.
Yeah, it was about trench play, you know what I mean? Up front, the line, the big uglies, you know, establishing position. Now it's football. Fun fact, that's exactly what football is now. It hasn't changed very much at all. There's a lot of other things around it, but it really is about the front. You know, like Greg, you're going to hear Greg say this later. You know, a lot of people say, we say it all the time, hey, if we are able to protect Mason fine, we're going to be okay. You know what that is? That's protecting up front. That's establishing position. That's showing dominance up front. It's all about the offensive and defensive line. It always has been. It always will be until they change the rules. That's what it's about. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, if you keep Mason Fine from being able to pass comfortably, then that game's over.
Yeah.
Not only that, but also if we can't find holes for Nick Smith, then the game's over.
Yeah. I mean, so the Florida Atlantic offense is a hyper version of all those offenses that, if you're an older football fan, that you saw throughout the 90s, maybe even through the 80s, it's established the run, and then you hit them with the play-action pass, and then late in the game, and my uncle used to say this all the time, man, in that fourth quarter, Emmitt Smith, you start, you know, he changes those 2-3 yard runs, those 4 yard runs into like 5-6-7 yard runs. Yeah, that's how football works. It's always worked the same way. You see it all the time. In every sport, everybody gets tired. You try to do your best to not be tired by the end of the game with preparation, with eating right, right? You know, you cut out your candy, you cut out the Skittles, all these things, so that way in the fourth quarter you have more energy than the next guy.
All of it. You don't cut out the Skittles because Skittles is beast mode. But North Texas has gotten really good at execution,
yeah,
executing the plays, becoming efficient, especially compared to efficient.
Yeah.
Especially compared to the last two seasons. But FAU is just that much better than us at executing the plays, keeping the drives going, and being consistent. So that's why they score more points than we do. They're more consistent in their drives.
Yeah, I mean, I think the consistency comes down to executing the specific type of play. In this case, it's running the ball. That's their power spread, this brow spread, their veer and shoot, whatever you want to call it. It's based on I'm getting text messages. It's based on power run, making you stop the run, and extreme vertical stretching. They don't do a whole lot of horizontal stretching, which you see in the air raid a lot, where especially, I don't know if you guys remembered Graham Harrell throwing quick outs, throwing the screen passes to Michael Crabtree, that kind of thing. We don't do a whole lot of that, but that is a feature of the air raid, those quick horizontal type plays where you get the wide receiver in space, maybe a couple blockers, and get him upfield. That is a very horizontal stretch. You don't see a whole lot of that in the veer and shoot, the browse offense. You see a lot of play action, play pass, throw it deep. We're going to go, you know, RPO, throw it deep, get somebody wide open in space. Against us, they did a little tight end, you know, arrows and shoot routes and things, but I think that was specifically for us, and they wanted to get their tight end more involved in the pass play. But those are just extra things. Their offense is play action, throw it deep. That's what they want to do. When they draw it up, when they're in the meetings, that's what they're talking about.
Yeah, and I think we are able to defend the pass on the sidelines. It's just over the middle that we may have an issue with it.
Yeah, and again, that's...
I'm honestly more concerned about the run game, defending the run.
Yeah, I mean, and again, like, we're good at... We're not built for D'ing this kind of thing up, like this kind of offense, of the offense that wants to run straight ahead right now, because we have some injuries, because we're a little bit light on the defensive line. And we're really built to stop a more of a spread attack. And this is not really a spread attack that you normally see where they're going to throw it around. And I think you saw that against Army. Army, who is smaller along the offensive line, but has great execution. They were kicking our ass, basically, right? They had 500-something yards rushing. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I mean, at the line of scrimmage, they would, you know, the snap would go off, and immediately there would be 2 to 3 yards of beyond the line of scrimmage that the offensive line was pushing.
Yeah, and I mean, we're hoping that, like, Tillman Johnson's going to be... I mean, he played in the Rice game, and he played well, yeah. We did a lot better against Rice, but Rice is not as good as Florida Atlantic. Like Antonio Woods, center for Florida Atlantic. By the way, he has like the softest voice, but then he's like real mean. You know what I mean? He's a big center. He's real good. But I was talking to him in conversation to say media days, and he's just like, yeah, I think we're going to do a good job. And, you know, like, but he's mean. So, I mean, that's what I'm concerned about. I think it's what everybody's concerned about. So if you want to have a key to the game, it's going to be, can we stop them in the first quarter? That's what it's going to come down to, because we're not going to be able to stop them in the fourth quarter if we hadn't stopped them in the first. It's not going to all of a sudden happen. And again, if you follow my line of thinking here, it's they're running the ball and they want to go at such a fast tempo that we can't keep up, right? It's like high intensity interval training, right? I think we mentioned the same thing before. Like, you get all the workout that you would get in a normal 30-minute, 40-minute workout, but you do it in 15 minutes because you do it at you know, as fast as you can in the shortest amount of time. So you're actually more tired than you would be if you actually, you know, spread it all out. It's the same thing. They try to do it high intensity the whole time, where by the time you get inside the 5-yard line, you have nothing left to do a goal line stand. And you saw this, right? You saw our guys just kind of get pushed back, and then, you know, Motor Singletary just waltzes in. Go look at all the highlights, all the Florida Atlantic highlights of them scoring from inside the 20, and all of them are, like, super easy because they just high-tempoed you. Tempoed you all the way down the field that the guys have nothing left to defend it.
And also they're all getting held. So.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, just like with Army, I totally respect their commitment to winning to the point where they will do anything and everything that it takes. Is it cheating? Yeah, but it's barely within the rules, right? You put the onus on the refs to make the call, and the refs are not going to do it. It's Conference USA, man.
Yeah, I mean the refs were calling the Army penalties,
holdings.
The holdings, but mostly the unsportsmanlike conducts that were probably, there was a holding and an unsportsmanlike conduct going on at the same play, and they were catching the unsportsmanlike conduct. The FAU game is probably one of the worst officiated games I'd ever seen. and I put it up on Twitter of, I think it was Keymon Hall getting held so bad that his jersey was being ripped down into the turf. Two refs were looking at the play, didn't call it. So it was just frustrating that not only were we getting beaten to a pulp, but the refs were part of the problem. They were giving the game to FAU early on in the first and second quarter, which didn't allow us to get into any kind of rhythm to get back into the game. So I think I want to fault the refs a little bit.
Well, I mean, Lane Kiffin said as much in the conference calls this week. He said, we were getting every call, meaning FAU. We were getting every call. All the balls were bouncing our way. And, yeah, he has a point. I mean, you can't really knock him for telling the truth. I mean, it's not even like saying the truth is kind of weird. You can't knock him for saying that. Like, I mean, he's not just trying to, you know, make us feel better or whatever. Because it is you look at it on the screen, the ball bounced their way a lot. There was a couple pass interference, obvious pass interference calls, and they didn't call them. And those benefited Florida Atlantic. In the moment, yeah, he's going to be like, yeah, I'm going to take it. I'm not going to give the ball back, right? That's how we do things around here. But they did benefit Florida Atlantic. I'm hoping that because it's a Conference USA championship game, there will be the best refs that Conference USA can muster. I mean, it's a showpiece game. Not only is it the championship game, but it's Lane Kiffin in the championship game, right? Like, people are going to watch. People are going to take a second look. So in that respect, I'm hoping we have the best refs available, you know?
Relatively speaking.
Yeah. It's Conference USA. And we don't have the best referees. I don't know what we could do about it at this point. Like, the conference needs to make more money. There needs to be more prestige so they can hire the best refs so that way they can, you know, get them. But until then, we got to work with what we got. And, you know, that's what I was saying before, that it's part of the game. It's part of the game plan. You have to prepare for terrible refereeing in Conference USA. That's part of your preparation.
And I think North Texas has an opportunity to submit a complaint, like one play per game, I believe, mm-hmm. where they can complain about officiating. So maybe they talk to Conference USA about it. Yeah. Who knows? But, you know, I don't want to have to rely on refereeing or officiating in order to win the game.
I agree. All right, so here's what kind of scares me. I mentioned this in the Mingry Nation Slack. You know, I said I kind of went down on a rabbit hole. I found myself watching Texas Tech versus Texas 2008, right? And the YouTube, the whole game's on YouTube. And you know, I was kind of watching Graham Harrell run the offense. I saw Seth Luttrell on the sideline there. I was like, hey, that's. I forgot he was on the running back coach on that team, and you know, like he stands out more because he looks like the coach that I see all the time, right? Same mannerisms, flipping a little paper, looking down, same kind of way, except Mike Leach is behind him looking kind of confused, like a confused professor. I think one thing that came of all this, watching all these games, was that I'm a little bit concerned that, you know, you look at the Seth Luttrell coaching tree, and I was kind of looking, I was like, I don't see a whole lot of big championship wins in that coaching tree. Like, yeah, Seth Luttrell won a national championship in 2000, right, when he's a fullback. And, you know, his dad won in the 70s, 1974 to 75, played fullback on those Oklahoma teams. I mean, and you can talk me down from this tree, right? Talk me down from this ledge. But I don't see, you know, Mike Stoops. I don't see Kevin Wilson. I don't see Larry Fedora winning very big games, because that they lost the UNC game, the conference championship
against
game,
right? Clemson.
Yeah, they lost that one. And then I was like, well, Mike Leach won a big game, right? That was a big game against Texas. It was a big game. It was the biggest game they played all season, until they played Oklahoma at Oklahoma later on that season, and they got shellacked. It's like 65 or something like that to 21 or something crazy.
Is Sonny Dykes in that tree?
Sonny Dykes is in that tree. And, you know, Sonny Dykes doesn't have a whole lot of big-time kind of wins, conference championship wins. That's what I was saying. I was kind of, like, worried about that, I guess. Wondering and worried. Wonder-worried. Contrast that with Mr. Lane Kiffin over here. He's prepared, and from a coaching perspective, right? He's prepared for national championship, right, at USC. He's prepared for national championship at Alabama. And he said that those experiences really helped him. You know, even Kid Briles has won titles, right, as a Big 12 titles, as a Baylor guy.
Did they win championships?
They didn't have the game, but, you know, they won big games. I don't know. That thought just creeped into my head, and as I was watching Mike Leach's teams do a very Mike Leach thing where they come out, they are not ready. It seems like they're not the best game planners. They're good schemers, but they're not game planners. Like, Bob Stoops is a real, you know, for a while there he was called Big Game Bob, because he would win those kinds of games until he would lose those kinds of games, right? It's, I don't know. I don't know what you think about Bob Stoops, but I think Bob Stoops, on a good day, could out-game plan some of the better teams. And I don't know, that just kind of concerned me a little bit. I was thinking about what Lane Kiffin was saying about the preparation, how Nick Saban likes to go through everything. All right, he's like, okay, who's gonna be a third string tackle? Okay, who's gonna be, you know, like, which way is the wind blowing? You know, talking about Conference USA rest, all of it, right? And Lane Kiffin was already known for his preparation. He would, I think, I saw Once Upon a Time, and I mentioned this before in a previous episode, where he'll get the depth chart and, like, talk about it, and it'll give, you know, strengths and weaknesses of each of the guys. He's like, this cornerback, he doesn't like to tackle. He's very bad with his hands. He has bad hand placement. Look out for this. He allowed 3 TDs in this game. You know, just the scouting report in each of the guys. And they'll go pick on him. They do a good job doing that. I don't know that we have the same thing. I'm not saying we don't. I just don't know it. Does that make sense?
No, I think we do, just because, you know, when I've been predicting people having big games, it's not because I'm some kind of offensive genius. I'm not at all. I just watched one or two games against these teams and noticed that they have a big, giant vulnerability in certain areas that just pop out on watching these reruns. And they're doing the exact same thing. They're finding out, hey, against this team, we can get Michael Lawrence open pretty easily 10 yards down the field. 3rd and 10, Let's run a play where it's a hitch for Michael Lawrence. Boom, he's wide open, first down. So I feel that they have been game planning, watching the film, and not accidentally just getting these third down conversions. They have been game planning, I think, a little bit more than you might give them credit for.
Well, I'm just saying. Like, I think what I'm saying is you could look at their coaching staff, definitely the head coaches, and you can point to them preparing well for championship games and winning. And then you look on this other side, and you don't have that, right? I mean, obviously, South Dakota's only in the second year. This is going to be the first test. It's a very subtle point that I'm making here, and please don't quote me and say, Adam said that you suck at coaching the big... I didn't say that. I'm saying, leading into this game, you look at the resume, and you can say, hey, this guy has displayed, you know... Like, if I say, tell me about a time that you've played a championship game, and you prepared, and you won. Lane Kiffin can do that. And I can say, on this other side, tell me about a time, and then Seth Rochelle says, well, I don't quite have that. That's it, right? Here's how I would do it. I think the right answer here is Seth Luttrell and the guys he's apprenticed under have been the under-talented team every time. UNC was talented. They were not as good as Clemson. That's pretty obvious. Clemson went on to play in the national title game.
But that's kind of predicated upon, you know, what an air raid team is. You usually implement the air raid team on these squads that are not as talented as the other guys in the league. Texas Tech wasn't as talented as the other teams, as Texas or Oklahoma.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. I think where the air raid has been implemented, or at least air raid principles, in talented teams, that Oklahoma squad, that 2008 Oklahoma squad nearly won a national title. Baker Mayfield is going to win Heisman, and they do a lot of air raid stuff. Lincoln Riley is an air raid guy. I think he was on the same staff with Seth Luttrell. I think that's right. Because Lincoln Riley was the offensive coordinator the next year for Texas Tech when Ruffin McNeil got promoted, when Mike Leach got fired. Ruffin McNeil moved to East Carolina, took Lincoln Riley with him. He coached there for 4 or 5 years, and then he went to Oklahoma, and now he's a coach. There's air raid in talented teams, and when it's on the talented teams, they win titles. So you don't have an advantage in scheme, and you're like, we're going to spread you out. I'm like, oh, you guys practice against this all the time. Oops. You know. I agree. That Texas Tech team and was the most talented Texas Tech team that had been there in the 10 years that Mike Leach was there. And even then, it wasn't as talented as that Oklahoma team. And I think that was all the difference.
And when you have guys like Graham Harrell and Crabtree, you know, I couldn't name you any other people on that team.
Detron Lewis, Baron Batch. I just watched the game. It's not that I just remember these guys.
Yeah, I always watch about 10 seconds of it so I can feel sad again. I was born in, for those listening, I was born and raised in Austin, so I was raised a Texas fan.
No.
And don't at me, I don't care what you say.
I mean, I grew up a Texas fan, but I was always a fan of the air. I was always a fan of the air raid. I was like, especially, again, back in my day, everybody used to run the ball out the power eye, including Texas. And you look at this crazy team line up with four wide receivers. I was like, that team is cool. They wear all black and they throw the ball around all game long. That seems fun. I love college football.
When you have a guy like, I guess back to my point, but yeah, when you have a guy slinging it like Graham Harrell or Messon Fine or in Crabtree or Jalen Guyton and Rico Bussey, they can win the games on their own. Or Wes Welker, now we have Michael Lawrence and Jalen Darden. They can Mason Fine is, and the scheme are putting the game on their backs and pulling out these wins that we wouldn't have been able to otherwise, especially if we were running that Dan McCartney, Mike Canales offense.
Yeah.
We would probably have won four games.
Yeah, I mean, just continuing that thread, like offensive schemes, a good offense, and you know, like this is relevant, especially since like what's his face, Chip Kelly just got hired at UCLA, and he does a spread to run kind of thing. I think he said, I like Chip Kelly's offense. He said, I mean, if we thought that the power eye would give us the best chance to win, we'd line up in the power eye and run the ball out the power eye. But we think this scheme gives us the best chance to win. And, you know, if we believe in the scheme and the coach and the players believe in the coaches, like the players believe that we have their best interest at heart. Like we are going to put them in the best position to win, and we're not just doing, you know, I like the scheme, let me just do it, and I'm just going to put you here. But this scheme, you know, accentuates your abilities, right? It makes you a better player. It puts you in the best position to succeed. If you can do that, and the players believe that you're doing that, and your scheme actually does that, then you're going to win. And you look at Oregon, right? They won a lot of games with a very low recruiting class relative to their competition.
Yeah, and here, you know, you've got when you're talking about putting guys in the right situation, you've got Michael Lawrence. He's always open. He's down. You can never see him because he's always running down the field. All of a sudden, he's open and catching a 30, 40, 50-yard pass.
Yeah.
Rico Bussey is catching in traffic or breaking tackles. Jalen Guyton is using his agility for him to get open, catching touchdown passes. It's incredible that how they're using the talent that they have, which is good talent in the receiving side of things, and putting him in successful situations.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if you look at our offense, like, well, how do we do that, right? You know, like the idea is to, at its core, get the ball quickly. Throw the ball short to guys that can go make plays, right? We throw the ball to Rico Bussey. He turns around and makes a play. We throw the ball to Mike Lawrence. Turns around and makes a play. I think the one play that was amazing that you saw an example of this was Turner Smiley catching a hitch, turning up the field, like leaping past the guy, and then going and scoring. And we're like, it got called back, but that's an example of the air raid in one of its pure forms, right? Line up, throw the ball to the guy that can make a play, and he was open. And you're like, well, how did he get so open? Well, because we're making everybody else a threat, right? Spreading them out, making them have to defend the whole field horizontally, vertically. And that means that they can't just double up easily on like a Turner Smiley or Jalen Guyton or Rico Bussey, et cetera, et cetera. And then it makes even some of the other players that wouldn't stand out, better. I mean, and I think we can even say Mike Lawrence is a good receiver. But, I mean, again, he's been underrated, partly because he looks like a guy that would be underrated, right? You're like, well, is he going to blow by everybody with amazing speed? Like, no. Okay, is he 6'5", 230 pounds, and just going to out-muscle somebody? Like, well, no. You're like, okay, what does he do? Like, well, he runs great routes. You're like, okay, well, how can we put that skill and maximize that? Well, let's put him in a scheme where running great routes means you're wide-ass open, you know? And you just make a catch. And then you can turn up the field, and then you know, obviously he's a good. I'm talking down about him right now, but he's a good college football receiver. I mean that he makes good catches.
Using him as an example.
Yeah, he's an example in this scenario here.
And when you've got guys like you, other teams are having to decide how to defend Guyton and Bussey and Lawrence and Darden and Kelvin Smith. Meanwhile, that opens up lanes for Nick Smith underneath to, you know, catch a screen pass or tunnel screen, or just go up the middle in the inside zone run.
Yeah. I mean, and you're like, well, that sounds like a good offense. Yeah, it has been. We've averaged 37 points a game and, you know, yeah, 430 points a game, whatever it is, yards a game, sorry. Yeah, it's been working. It probably will work to an extent against Florida Atlantic. The thing is that Florida Atlantic has good corners, right? And they can do a better job of answering the question that we ask of them, right? When we say, we're going to spread you out, can you guard us? When we spread you out and put everybody on an island. One reason, you know, going back to this Oklahoma in 2008, versus Texas Tech game that I'm talking about here. One reason that Oklahoma was able to guard them is because they had the guys that could guard them. When you have enough corners, when you have enough defensive backfield that can run with your four wide receivers, then, you know, you've answered a big question. Like, the guys are not so wide open. And, you know, that Texas Tech team had Michael Crabtree, who was, you know, the best receiver in the nation at the time. We have really good receivers, but it looked like in the earlier game, when it was October, Florida Atlantic was able to guard our guys close enough and get enough pressure on a quarterback that we, asking all these questions of them, right? Can you guard us when we spread you out? Can you run with our guys? Can you keep up with our tempo? And they're like, yes, yes, and yes. We're like, oh, crap. Well, I guess we're going to turn the ball over then.
What time is it?
Yeah, is it time to go? But, yeah, so even then, we were right there. If we get that first down conversion when Jeff Wilson fumbles it, it was like a bad snap, that whole combination. If we can get that first down conversion, I think we're in business. We're okay. But I think more important than can we score on them, can we move the ball on them, because I think the answer there is yes. Yes, to a certain extent we can, and I think we'll be able to do that this weekend, is can we stop them? One reason our offense was out of sorts is because they would go down and score, and there was a lot of pressure on our guys. We're like, well, they just scored seven. Now we got to score seven. Okay, we turn the ball over, and they go down and score seven more. It's 14-0. We're like, okay, well, we really got to score now. And then, you know, I think that was the interception, the next one. And then they go down and they score. And so we're like, okay, 17 points down. We really got – okay, we turned the ball up again. Like, it was kind of snowballing. There's a little bit of pressure there to keep up with Fort Atlantic. And that's, it may sound familiar because that's the way we play. That's the way we like to play, right? When we're like, hey, we're going to score every time, and our defense just needs to be good enough to stop you enough times where we get you uncomfortable. That's exactly how we play.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of like the Army game where we were able to keep up the scoring with them, and it just goes back to the offense. If UTSA created a formula of attacking the right tackle, attack the offensive line, get Mason Fine out of rhythm, out of the pocket, and, you know, make him turn the ball over or make him punt it. And that's what happened against FAU. And the defense was just not able to handle a guy like Devin Singletary. He's, like I was talking about before that game, he's a really good running back that can, you know, push guys over, create his own space. He's got patience. He's got a great stutter step.
Yeah, I think, I mean, even that, I think we did an okay job slowing him early. I think where Devin Singletary has been, and I don't, you know what, I'm going to pull up right now. I think where he's been most dangerous is late in the game. And, you know, if that makes sense to you, well, it should. Because, again, like, they're playing at such a high tempo. They don't have the greatest, first quarter, second quarter, rushing attack. I'm kind of speculating here, but I want to say this right now. I'm looking it up. It's late in the game. Like, you turn it on, you're like, well, they're playing a close game. Like, oh, well, there goes Devin Singletary for, you know, 44 yards in the third quarter. How did he do that? Well, they just kind of beat him down. Let's look at the situational stats. Let's see. Yeah. Second quarter, 8 yards a carry. That's what he's averaging.
Cool.
First quarter, it's six. Second quarter, 7.87, and then the fourth quarter, 6.95. That doesn't quite prove my point. But I just kind of mostly want to talk about these later ones. But that's how I've seen it. I've watched these games. I mean, against North Texas, I mean, he kind of ran wild a little bit. Against Western Kentucky, late in the game, he exploded. Against Marshall, it was late. Louisiana Tech, he only had 104 yards, but they were kind of blowing him out already. Here's our hope. Beam of light. Marshall, Louisiana Tech, Florida International played well-ish against them. Marshall played the best against FAU. Charlotte's not good, but FAU had a similar game that we had against Rice where they didn't play that very well, so we can't take too much from that game. They're good. I don't know that they're going to execute at the same at the highest level like they did against us.
Yeah, there were a few factors that really just got the game out of hand. It was allowing them to score early and quickly. Us turning the ball over several times. I think Bussey had the fumble. Mason Fine had the interception, and then we had a turnover on downs. I think, if yeah. I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
And so there's three turnovers right there, while FAU is getting the ball and scoring, and on top of that, the officiating crew was giving the game to FAU, and not allowing North Texas to get into it. So there was just a whole bunch of bad factors all falling into place to create such a historically bad performance, that I don't think will be there this weekend. I think it'll be a lot closer game than FAU wants it to be.
Here's hoping, man. Here's hoping. Like, again, here's what scares me. We knew it was coming against Army. We knew what they were going to do, and we couldn't stop it. 500-something yards. In this way, Florida Atlantic is going to be different in that they're not going to do the these schemes and all this weird execution blocking against us, this option blocking. But they're very similar. They're going to just attack it. They're going to do their gap runs. They're going to do their inside zone runs. They're going to do their QB keepers on that fire crackback where they fake like they're doing a zone, but the running back pivots and turns and becomes a lead blocker for Jason Driscoll. That's going to happen. They're going to have
Driscoll's a good runner.
Yeah. They're going to have some motion to the tight end where they turn and just throw it to him for 3 yards, and he's going to run up and battle for a couple extra. That first quarter where we didn't do well, first couple drives we got beat, they scored touchdowns. Those are going to be the key. Against Army, I think we stopped them on their second or third drive. We forced them to punt. And then we got a special teams play against them. Those are key. I mean, in the second half, it was going possession for possession, right? And I know we turned the ball over and we kind of basically made it even, but we were going score for score with them. And I don't know that we could do that against Florida Atlantic because of the way that they play and how aggressive their defense is. Their defense is better than Army's defense. They have more talent than Army's defense. So we can't just say, all right, we'll just chuck it up, score another touchdown. Like, it's not going to be so easy. And so this is the one team that I don't think we can go score for score with because I think we're going to mess up. So we have to stop them early in the game. That's the key, if there is the key. Stop them early. Get the stops early. And, I mean, I think that means pull out some of the stops. Get a little weird, be a little bit more aggressive early. When your guys have energy, when your guys are not beat down, when your defensive line still has, energy to take on a double team,
And, stay when your linebacker stays assigned to your gap. Well, there were a few times where both Colton McDonald or Brandon Garner and EJ Ajia were trying to sneak onto, both of them were trying to sneak to one side of the line, and they got sealed off by just the center or the gap or the right guard or whichever guard.
Yeah.
And that would open a huge giant hole for Singletary. You know, he wasn't having to work for those yards because our linebackers were just in the wrong position and then getting caught there. And Singletary would just go for 12 to 15 yards untouched before getting tackled by, McLean or Hall or
yeah. And even then, I don't even think that he had his biggest run until like later in the second quarter, I want to say. I don't have the game plan in front of me. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that happens is that like, you start getting worn down, and then you start cheating. And then when you start cheating, and this is football in general, when you start cheating one way or another, then they make you pay, right? Then they seal you off. If once they see you, like, flowing too hard or cheating up, like you were saying, getting out of your gap, getting out of your assignment, then they start hitting you with a counter. And then you're out of position, and then you start diving, and then tackles are broken, right? Because you can't arm tackle anymore because, that's not a good way to tackle one, and then he's pretty big and strong and started to do that. But yeah, I mean, that's where you start seeing breaking those tight. I thought we did an okay job in those first couple drives, believe it or not. But, you know, the offense really put us in a bad spot. And I agree. Overall, this is going to be a closer game than it was before. But I still don't know that we have enough for Florida Atlantic, just based on what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. That Army game really just took out a lot of hope in my life. It's yeah. What it was.
There were a lot of injuries, but I think there was some, you know, our offense is rolling. Last week, they kind of took it easy just because the game was in hand and, you know, we didn't have to do too much in order to keep the game in hand. But the week before against Army, they were on fire. I know those defensive backs aren't as good as the defensive backs for FAU, but, you know, we can find a way to pass against them. And that is something, you know, they're going to put some yards up. They're going to put some points up. And I think that will be the offense being more in rhythm will be the key to win the game.
So just quickly, Florida Atlantic depth chart. They have Hunter Snyder, 6'7", 260 defensive end. Jeremiah Tolini, 6'2", 300. He's a graduate senior. Stephen Leggett, 6'1", 290 junior. Backup defensive tackles. William Davis, 6'2", 275. Kevin McCrary, 6'2", 285. Defensive end, Leighton McCarthy, 6'3", 205. Those are not the biggest dudes, and Florida Atlantic allows some yards. I mean, if you got the North Texas offense and dropped it into the Marshall team, I think Marshall would have won that going away because he just had the defense to stop them, and they were kind of keeping up with them. Marshall was able to score. Marshall doesn't have the greatest defense. Sam Nickelbacker is Herb Miller, 6'2", 190. Their Mike Aziz Al-Shair, that dude's the guy everybody's talking about, 6'2", 228. He's a junior. He was at Conference USA Media Days. Will linebacker Rashad Smith, 6'2", 210. Their strength are those linebackers there. They fly around, make plays. Al-Shair especially. I would love to have Aziz Al-Shair on our team because we'd be a really good defense if we had that guy. He makes a lot of plays. Cornerbacks Chris Tooley, Jalen Young, Andrew Soro, Shelton Lewis. I forget which one of those guys got the pick, but they play aggressive. That's really it. Nothing intimidating about these guys. You're just looking at them, you're like, okay, they seem like just football player type dudes. But yeah.
That aggressive defense forces quarterbacks to throw interceptions.
Yeah, I mean, they bring a lot of pressure, and they rely on Aziz Al-Shair to clean up the messes. And he does a great job doing that. Like, he's smart enough to make plays. And so they get enough pressure with their front four. And sometimes they bring pressure too, and they trust their corners to play man-to-man defense on occasion and dare you to stop them. Against North Texas, yeah, that they bring calculated pressure. A lot of teams do that. Rice sacked us twice, right? Three times on a drive. Those are the concern things about our Abolish Squad. Mason Fine threw an interception, a pick six last week against Rice. And those are the kinds of plays that are not ideal, man. He threw an interception against Army. That was another one. He stared down his receiver. We really don't need those kinds of plays against this FAU team. And at this point, I'm not liking that. The other thing is that Jason Driscoll, he's not the best quarterback. Like, if you make him stand up there and throw the ball around, he's not the best.
He's not accurate.
Yeah, and, I mean, but when you make it easy on him, and North Texas made it easy on him, it's bad. It's not good. Andy Flushi, he's still listed. I think he was a little banged up. Roderick Young, Ladarius Hamilton. I don't know that we have any injuries along the line. I think we'll see more Tony Krasnicki.
Have we heard anything about Bryce English? I'd hate to bring it up.
No, I don't think he's going to play this season, and that's fine. I mean,
it's a bummer.
It is really well. Yeah. I'd really like to see Colton McDonald have himself a day at linebacker this time. I felt that he was being exploited. I think they were game planning for him. I felt like they were running at him a lot, running around him, like making him say, okay, Colton McDonald, make a play. And he didn't, not enough times that we needed him to do. And I mean, obviously, I'm saying this on a defense that allowed 804 yards. Nobody made plays, right? If anybody was like, actually, I played well. No, you didn't, because you allowed 804 yards. Nobody played well.
Yeah, and I know what you're saying. Like, if Colton McDonald, if something's coming through his gap, he can handle that. But if they're stretching the play towards his side, then that's when we see struggles.
Yeah. I mean, and I've seen a lot of people complain about Ashton Preston's, like, coverage. I think he's done well. I've liked the way Ashton Preston plays. I like him as a nickel back out there. Is something still bothering Josh Wheeler? Because I feel like he hasn't been the dominant force he was last season, or at least the attacking force.
Yeah, I feel like he's still, you know, bogged down by some injury.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the thing, is that, like, we need pressure. We need to get to the quarterback. I mean, this is a very simple. This is every, like, we need to stop touchdowns, and we need to score touchdowns. Like, yes, these are the basic things. Ladarius Hamilton, the defense played well last week, but that was Rice, and they're not good, and they don't execute well. And they even had opportunities against us.
But there's something to be said about confidence, gaining confidence.
Yeah. I don't think last week was too rough on anybody, and for the most part, we're going to be as healthy as we can be. I feel like we need to pull out some craziness on defense, something strange. Give them a slightly different look, but even then, like, you're always playing on the back foot on defense, right? You're reacting. Even if you're attacking, you're still reacting. You're reacting to the formation, you're reacting to the situation, you know, you're reacting all the time. So I don't know how crazy we can get, but I mean, I think we're gonna have to stop the run. We have to treat this team like an option team. Stop the dive, stop the inside zone, and make Driscoll beat us over the top. I mean, he did once or twice, but that has to be it. We can't get beat by the run game getting 5-6 yards every time. It can't happen. And I don't know what that means. If that means, you know, putting Tillman Johnson in for Josh Wheeler and playing, you know, like a
defensive end.
Yeah, like, it's like, if that means playing like a 4-3, just, you know, let's do that. I know we were playing this hybrid 3-3-5, 4-2-5 look. But I mean, I don't know. I think we need more size up there. I think we need somebody to stop that run game. And really, when we were able to do that, we were okay. And I think that'll give the offense enough confidence. That's my breakdown of the game. That's all I got.
We just need to come out and score.
Just need to come out and win.
That's my key to the game. Score touchdowns.
Let's go to Aldo's key to the game. We just need to score, please. Score touchdown. And that's Aldo's key to the game here on the Mean Green Nation podcast. Folks, I think we're about done. I got a lot of writing to do. I got to write about this game. I got to do some breakdowns. A whole lot of stuff. But forget all pessimism, right? We're talking to you real right now. We're giving you the real. So we're not going to blow smoke up anything that you have.
81-0.
Yeah. But, I mean, here's the thing. Look, I'm going to be rooting I think we're going to blow them out. I'm going to convince myself right around game time that we're going to blow them out. And I just want to talk to you right now, folks. Everybody gather around. Everybody get close to the podcast right now. Is everybody in? Take a knee. Let's go. Look, man. This is what we play for right here. We play to win championships. You have a great opportunity in front of you. You have a great opportunity for this university, for this program, for your families, for your friends, for your girlfriends, for your boyfriends. All of them. This is a chance to win something, to put another trophy, a banner up at Apogee Stadium, the first championship won in Apogee Stadium. That's special. You've already done special things. You already went undefeated at home in Apogee. Let's make it extra special and then go celebrate at a bowl game and get a win over there too.
Yeah, not just get an opportunity for a conference game, but or a conference title game, but also get an opportunity for a decent bowl tie-in, one that we haven't seen here ever.
You mean like go to better bowls, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
We're going to the New Orleans Bowl, man. I'm telling you, that's what's going to happen. I don't think they're going to choose the Independence Bowl. Then you go to the New Orleans Bowl.
I mean, I would prefer the Independence Bowl, obviously. It's got a little bit more prestige. You know, you see better teams playing there.
Yeah.
But if that's what the team picks, that's what the team picks, and I'm not gonna judge them for it.
No, I'm all right. So let's take 2 minutes and have some bowl talk. Why are we going to New Orleans Bowl? One, I've seen too many whispers, right? I've asked around, and I mean, even George Dunham, noted enemy of Austin, super fan on Twitter, mortal enemies. They can't pass each other in the hallway. They start fighting. We had to break it up. You know, he was like, I've been hearing from people that we're going to New Orleans Bowl. And so you're like, well, why is the New Orleans Bowl? I don't like that bowl. What's the big deal? Well, North Texas has history at the New Orleans Bowl. A lot of old-time North Texas people have good feelings about it. New Orleans is a great town. It's a good destination. Shreveport, not so much. And so I think there's good feelings there. I know a lot of people are like, oh, let's never play a Sun Belt team. I think that is short-sighted. I think winning a bowl game is a good thing. Going to having a good time, having fun at a bowl game is fun. And, you know, I don't really think the opponent matters too much. Nobody really remembers too much of that.
I mean, if the opponent's somebody like, I don't want to say Troy because they're having a pretty decent year for a few, couple years. But if it's like Arkansas State, I'm going to throw them under the bus. I'm going to talk bad about them. If it's somebody like Arkansas State, we're not going to remember that. But if it's somebody like a Texas Tech or a Texas or a Florida State, you would say, we beat Florida State at the Independence Bowl. That is, there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, I think the other issue, though, and people are forgetting that, even if we go to the Independence Bowl, that other teams have an option and they can express a preference also. All of this is about relationship. Like, I was saying this on, you know, everybody's been saying, like, the winner picks, and yes, that is the effective, you know, that the shorthand way of talking about it. The winner of the conference USA championship game picks where they want to go. But as Rand Baker said, he's like, there's kind of a misconception about the way the process works. Like, they have input, they can maybe express an opinion, but it's between the schools, the bowls, TV, and yes, all those things are true. Officially, the conference points you where to go, but the conference is going to respect its members' decision. And if you are, say, 10-3 North Texas, who just beats FAU, and you say, I'd really like to go to the New Orleans Bowl, what are they going to tell you? No? I mean, they're going to be like, okay, we're going to take that into account. Thanks, you've done a great job being a good representative for the conference. So they're going to take that, and they're going to talk to the bowl representatives. Hey, New Orleans Bowl people, we got North Texas. They really want to come here. Is that cool with y'all? And they're going to say, yeah, well, maybe. And who owns all these bowls? ESPN Events. So they're like, maybe, I don't know, that's going to get the highest rating. All right, what if you go to this bowl? What if we match you up with this team? And so, yeah, there are all these stakeholders, and I just pointed out everybody that Ren Baker said. But, yeah, North Texas, if we win, we get to pick. We get to exercise whatever, you know, choice we have in the matter by saying, hey, I'd really like to go to this bowl. I mean, same thing last year. Heart of Dallas Bowl moved things around because the Navy didn't want to play us. They're like, yeah, we don't want our reward for having such a good season to play a 5-7 team. And that's fair. That makes sense.
And another point that you were saying about TV, ESPN. You know, we've been playing most of our games when it's on ESPN. It's been on ESPN3. So not even on TV. It's been
streaming. We played Iowa on ESPN2.
And then that was my next point.
Yeah.
So when we play Iowa, we're on ESPN2. When we play Lane Kiffin-led FAU, we're on ESPN2. So the next step up
would hopefully be ESPN.
Regular ass ESPN. You know, flip to that channel 1 or 570, whatever it is on Fios, and be on actual TV, and not one of the ESPN El Ocho.
Isn't the New Orleans Bowl on ESPN?
I don't know, and I would be surprised.
Are you ready to be surprised right now? No. It's on ESPN.
Well, I would prefer to watch the Independence Bowl on ESPN. And if you say that the Independence Bowl is on ESPN2, I'll cry.
Let's see. Is the Independence Bowl? I'm gonna look it up right now. Bowl TV. TV coverage. I'm googling.
Tippity tap.
You know, one time I was filling out some HR form at a job, and then some lady goes, all right, don't mash the buttons. Because all they did was, like, change the screen. I don't know if you know this. I'm familiar with the computers. You know, they don't frighten me. And so I just did, like, an Alt-Tab to switch between screens. And she's like, oh, you mashed the buttons. And I think about every time. I think about that every time I do really anything with a computer. I think about, like, that lady. The Independence Bowl. It is on ESPN. Okay.
Okay. Feel a little bit better.
Just a little bit.
I mean, but in the end, it's for the kids. Do it for the kids.
Yeah, I mean, it is for the kids. It's a little bit for fans because the fans want to travel, and I think having a good turnout. I mean, you ask those Heart of Dallas Bowl attendees of 2016 and 2013, was it cool seeing friends and family at the stadium? They're going to tell you yes. It was fun. It was a great time. And because it is, right? I mean, you do this, you put in a lot of work in, you want people to go see you. Nobody wants to be in front of 9,000 people, right? And that's it. You want a full house. That's part of the dream. And one reason why these guys choose the bigger, more well-supported schools, the P5 schools, because they have bigger stadiums. I mean, they have the opportunity to go play in front of 100,000 people. Like, we wanted to go play Tennessee in Neyland Stadium, and they were complaining about the low turnout. And it was 100,000 people in there. I was like, this is a lot of people, and this is the bad turnout. It's amazing. When we have low turnouts, you can see the chairs. Yeah, I couldn't see the chairs over there. So, I mean, yeah, I think they wanted to travel. I never thought they were going to do a Heart of Dallas Bowl unless they get somebody like Texas Tech. But I don't think they're going to get Texas Tech because you can see it in the fans. They're like, what? North Texas, aren't they still in the FCS? Like, shut up, kid. No, we're not. And you don't know college football, and also you're like 19. You're barely new. You're born in the 2000s. I can't trust anything you say. So, yeah, it's like, they're not going to want to play us. And that was my point about, like, Navy not wanting to play us. The same way we don't get excited about playing Sun Belt schools is the same way P5 schools get about playing any G5 schools, including the good North Texas team. They're just not super excited about it. And so that's my point about saying, oh, we want the Independence Bowl because we'll get to play an SEC school. Well, that might not be the case. We might get an AAC school, and we're going to be a little bit more disappointed. And it's my contention that New Orleans is better than Shreveport. Turns out that New Orleans, the cultural capital and destination city in North America, is better than Shreveport, which is not known for any of those things. You know? Like, these are just facts, man. Yeah, exactly. They're like, we have a casino. Please come. Where is Shreveport? It's kind of over here. I mean, it's not that bad a drive from where you normally live and work. You can come here. I mean, New Orleans is just objectively more, it's a better trip. I mean, people drive to New Orleans all the time. Not too many people drive to Shreveport for the fun of it. Although, I do know people that do that. So
on their way to New Orleans.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we'll stop at Shreveport, I guess. Get a practice run. Warm up for New Orleans. I mean, so in that respect, New Orleans is a good place. I feel like you'll get all of it, right? You'll get a good destination. It's a destination bowl for the kids. They get to go play, you know, in an NFL stadium, right? And have a good time. The fans get a trip. You get to have fun. And you get to play a beatable opponent. And I know those are famous last words, right? Troy is a good team. If Arkansas State beats Troy, you know, what does that mean, right? Even if it's Appalachian State.
Yeah, it'll be a very fun game if we're there playing Troy.
Yeah. I mean, look, all these bowls are just whatever bowl. So I'm like, make it a fun trip. Make it a fun game. Either a fun matchup. Like, Army was a fun matchup last year. Like, oh, it's kind of a rematch. It's a Hard Dallas Bowl. That was all fun. But it wouldn't be fun anymore. And it's not so much fun for these kids to go to the Hard Dallas Bowl again. Right? Just change it up. So, I mean, that's one reason why we're not going to Hard Dallas Bowl this time. Although I love the Hard Dallas Bowl. Cotton Bowl is a great venue.
It is, and it's just a train ride away for me.
Yeah, I mean, but, I mean, you don't want it to be... I mean, we already just had a train ride down to SMU, right? So we don't want to do that again. So
no,
I totally...
have to.
Yeah. I'm saying is I get it, and that's another reason why we wouldn't choose a Boca Raton Bowl. I was like, We played in the stadium twice already. We're not going to do it the third time against some other team. You know, it's just not fun anymore. So, yeah, too much Army, too much Boca Raton. We're pretty much, I have to feel like we're just going to New Orleans Bowl. I've already made tentative plans to drive that away. Well, that's
plane
it, guys. Huh?
Plane tickets are cheap right now.
Yeah, I think we're just going to drive. Just going to drive.
It'll be a good drive.
All right, folks, this has been the Mean Green Nation podcast. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or any of your podcasts. How do you subscribe to the podcast? That's how you should do it. Talking to the people. I'm not talking to you all the time, Aldo. There are other people listening. Yeah, I mean, I personally use, like, how do you listen to podcasts? Is it through, you have an iPhone?
I do, but I'm so tech unsavvy. Well, I'm not tech unsavvy. I'm just so lazy that I just go to their Twitter, whoever I'm interested in. I go to their Twitter.
And just listen that
way. They got it posted. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you can I mean, if you're listening to the show right now, then, I mean, you've obviously found the show. But if it's just a link and you're just playing it on the browser and you're like, you know, I'd like to get alerts. I see people talking about a podcast feed. iTunes has they have the podcast app. A lot of people use that, and that's pretty much fine. I personally use Pocket Cast. It's real.
Yeah, that's what I recommend.
Yeah, I like Pocket Cast. Other people use other ones, and Marco Arment, he developed one, and that one's pretty good. I forget what it's called right now, but it has like Smart Speed or whatever. That one's good too. Use that one. Now I'm gonna talk to Greg. I'm going to say bye to Aldo, talk to Greg, we'll talk to basketball, and that's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Go Mean Green. Let's beat up on Fort Atlantic.
Go Mean Green.
All right, Mr. Godecker, thanks for joining the show. It's good to have you back on the podcast waves.
It seems like it's been over a year.
Something like that, yeah.
You should have some intro music for me or something.
Dun, 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 like that. Here we go. Basketball. It started. It's the Grant McGaslin era. The guy with the socks. He's like 5'4" or something like that. And yet he's a good basketball coach. I was like, I mean, how's this 5'2" guy going to teach us basketball? Like, what does he know about basketball? But he won 20 games at Arkansas State. He seems like a cool guy. Everybody that's ever talked to him has liked him. And I think you have high expectations for him. I think everybody's picking North Texas to finish somewhere near the basement of Conference USA, but you had some higher expectations. Yes.
Yeah. For what we're paying him, we went out, paid the big buyout for, school of our size to buy out somebody like him and to give him the big contract. He should be winning 20 games a year. Do I think they can get to 20 games this year? That's going to be tough because if you've paid attention to Conference USA basketball early on this season, you've seen Western Kentucky take down Purdue and SMU. You've seen Old Dominion play good. You're seeing tonight Louisiana Tech was up by one, I believe, on Alabama at halftime. So the top five teams in Conference USA, they're really good. And I think the top tier for what North Texas can be is in that middle pack, that 6-10 range. That's where I think eventually, we'll be for this year. We might, we'll get to the conference tournament and we might win a game, but then we're going to run into one of those really good teams and probably bow out. But like I said, we're gonna have sloppy games early on, like you saw on Monday or the other day against I forgot already who we played against Grambling. We had the nice first 10 minutes of the second half where we had the big run and then we let them back in the game. Those type of things you're gonna see early on as this team tries to grow up and gel together.
So I've heard you mention that. I agree with you, by the way. Yeah, I've seen you write that a bunch of times, that we're going to be sloppy early. And you talked about, like, the motion offense taking a while to get, for people to understand it, especially with a lot of new players. Can you explain a little bit what the motion offense is? I mean, is it just people running around They just run around with chicken out of head.
He's not necessarily, you know, a motion, a true motion like Bob Knight offense. His is more a John Calipari dribble drive motion. And it makes sense when you have guys like A.J. Lawson and Ryan Woolridge who excel at attacking the basket. And when you had a guy like Gibson before he got hurt who could attack the basket as well, but he could also shoot from the outside. So the idea was we're going to attack the basket, but we're going to have shooters around the outside. So we'll drive and kick back out. You know, if it's not there, we'll hit the three. So basically you're trying to drive, you're trying to attack the gaps, you're trying to attack the basket, you're trying to get those easy looks, and you're trying to, you know, in the world that we live in, college basketball, the referees call a lot of fouls. You've seen the majority of the points that North Texas gives up on the defensive side is at the free throw line. So basically, they're just trying to attack the basket. If it's not there, kick out. And that guy can either attack or that guy shoot. They've run into some issues early on where, you know, they got hit with the zone defense in the Rio Grande Valley game. And they really hadn't practiced zone offense, you could tell. It's something that happens all over the place. It happened when you were in high school playing basketball. The first time you got hit with a zone defense, you're like, what do we do? Because you only really practice against man. So they kind of were confused. And then they got their stuff together in the next game against Georgia Tech. You could see the crisp ball movement, the passing. And they were starting to understand. And then the Grambling State game, the second half, like I said, that first 10 minutes, they busted the zone. They started to understand that in the dribble drive, I can still attack the zone. I don't have to pass the ball around the perimeter and hope for something to happen. I can drive, get two guys on me, kick. That guy can drive, attack a gap. The gaps will be even further open, you know, those type of things. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, these guys, they're really starting to figure it out. And then they got hit with the full court press, and you know, then they kind of fell apart.
Yeah, when you see teams just slowly pass the ball around the perimeter against the zone, I mean, any decent zone team practices against doing that. They're just not even really doing anything. They're just walking and resetting. You have to pass with a purpose.
Yeah, the drill is called a shell drill.
Yeah,
where you're just passing around the outside and you're just moving your feet and, okay, the ball's over here. Now where do I need to be?
Yeah, so you're just running through a drill if you're not passing with purpose or attacking the zone. So we should expect them to improve. Like, I mean, what, it ended end of December, early January? When do you think it'll click for this team?
You know, probably sometime in conference play. I'm hoping for early in conference play, but it might be the middle of conference play. You got to remember, we got a lot of new faces playing with each other. The roster turned over again, like it always had under Benford. Well, Grant brought in his guys, so turned over. So these guys are trying to get used to playing with one another again. And they're not elite athletes. They're not elite talent guys like Calipari at Kentucky, where you can throw a five-star recruit out there, and even if the offense looks sloppy, they can still create for themselves. This is a little bit different. These guys all have to work together to make the offense look good. Nobody's going to bail out the offense.
Yeah, there's no future NBA player out there that we can just toss the ball to and say, go make it happen.
No, but there's good pieces there. There's Ryan Woolridge who can break down a defense. There's Lawson who can break down a defense, but he can finish around the rim too.
Yeah.
He's not as explosive as Ryan is. And then there's Duffy and there's Roosevelt Smart who can shoot from the outside. There's Shane Tamara who you can run a lot of pick and pop plays for and hit threes from the outside. He's probably been the most consistent overall offensive player has been Tamara, really. He hasn't gotten a lot of credit for it, but
yeah, I mean, he's been really good inside. Like, I've enjoyed watching this team much more than I have watching any of Benford teams. I mean, not only is it just like that early relationship glow where, you know, any mistake, I think, oh, it's going to be okay because they're going to improve that later. Whereas like towards the end of the Benford, you know, years, I'm like, oh, yet another mistake. Oh my God.
Yeah. And it goes back to coaching. You know, you talked about Grant McCaslin. He gets in the face of the players. If you make a mistake, he will let you know, but he's teaching you. It's not go sit down at the end of the bench. No, we're going to teach you that we need to do this right. And a lot, man, if you got a chance to watch the Georgia Tech game, the announcer, he kept beating it. You know, that second half where Grant called basically all of his timeouts by the under 12 TV timeout.
Yeah.
He had used them all up. And he was calling so many timeouts because he wanted to make sure that our guys were understanding what they were doing wrong on the floor. And that's good coaching. Hey, we might not win this game, but we're going to learn something from it. We're going to take something from it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that exact same thing. Like, we may lose this game, but because we're learning something here, we're definitely going to win some game down the road because we learned the lesson here. And yeah. I mean, yeah, I take that trade off. I mean, you know, the college basketball regular season, if you're not a top 25 team entering the season, is basically just prep for the conference tournament. You need to win the conference tournament if you want to get into the big tournament. So all this time is really just improving your team for the end of the season, yeah?
I wouldn't say top 25. You could probably expand it out a little bit further because you do have the 32, you know, conference champions, but you have that large selection. So there's, you know, there's teams trying to build a resume. You know, Middle Tennessee State, that's a team that in our conference that's trying to build a resume because they may not win the conference tournament. Louisiana Tech, same thing. Those are, you know, if any year is going to be a year where Conference USA gets two teams in, this would be the year. But there's going to be a lot of attrition at the top five, UAB, Old Dominion, Tech, Middle Tennessee, and Western Kentucky.
So, all right, I guess what should we expect going into this next game? Who do we got next? I don't have.
Well, we got Oklahoma next. The next two games are going. Actually, the next three are going to be very telling because we got Oklahoma. We have UT Arlington, who was up by 14 last time I checked against Rice tonight, and then we get an Indiana State team who's. I mean, they're not great, but they're better than we are right now.
Yeah.
So we get Oklahoma tomorrow. We'll have a preview on that. That's going to be, I mean, you're looking at like a 1% chance of of winning that type of game. Long Krugler, he's got a really good team. They're top 40 in efficiency on offense and defense. You look at their point guard, Trey Young, he's playing really well. Kadeem Latin, the 6'9" forward, he's playing well. You know, but our guy, Zachary Simmons, he played well against an all-conference guy in Lammer. So, and he's been improving the past two games. Now you get Kadeem Latin. So I'm interested to see, you know, what's his progression. But, you know, getting back to Oklahoma, they do a lot really well. And they do play with really good tempo as well. You know, they like to get up and down the court. And that's North Texas. When they're in the fast break, they do really well. So there's a chance that we see – I want to see if Coach Mack, G-Mack, will allow the guys to run with Oklahoma. Or does he do the Georgia Tech thing where let's slow this down, let's make this a grind-out game, you know, our possession, time of possession is going to be long. That'll be an interesting – dynamic to watch because I think we've been really good in the fast break offense. I think when our guys get out and run, they get to the basket, they get really good shots, and they're productive. And we're not great in the half court offense. So, you know, this could be a game where Oklahoma scores, you know, close to 100 points, and if Coach McCaslin opens it up, we could score, you know, 85 ourselves. So that'll be something to watch. And I think if we're going to be in the game, if we're going to be, close, you know, within 10. It's turnovers. Grambling State had 29 points off of turnovers the other night. We've got to find a way to cut that down. The only guy who isn't really turning the ball over has been Tamara. Everybody else has been atrocious, just what making decisions. And it comes down to lazy passes at the top of the key. We've seen that quite a bit. But in the dribble drive, when you get close to the basket or you make your drive and you get cut off, you've got to make a good decision with the ball at that point. You're either hoping that you have a shooter in the corner or you're hoping that your big guys are making themselves available for the pass. And that hasn't really worked out a bunch. And even if our guys are open and then they're doing our jobs, the guys that are driving, they're making poor passes. The fundamentals, that part of the offense hasn't worked out. So definitely have to take care of the ball tomorrow night against Oklahoma, because they're one of the better teams in the country at getting turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of support your point there, you could see us, we were driving into traffic and then looking like we didn't quite know what we're doing, and that hesitation was all that Georgia Tech needed to strip the ball or, you know, intercept a pass or something like it. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. Well, thanks, Greg. Thanks for joining us again. And Greg will be jumping in and, you know, talking basketball with us, especially as we pivot away from football to basketball.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot on the line this weekend in football too. So,
do you have a quick prediction? You got anything?
You know, I think it's going to be the Lane Kiffin dynamic this week, especially today. The past, you know, 24, 48 hours with everything that's gone down at Tennessee, like his Twitter. You know, he's been lighting Tennessee up on Twitter. Does that take away at all his ability? Like, if we know anything about Lane Kiffin, is that his, you know, he's a very proud person. He's, you know, got the hubris effect that I truly believe that he believes he can come out, use the same game plan they used in whatever week that we played them the last time, and then it'll work again. He'll run the same plays. That's the type of person he is. He won't change anything and say, you know what, we're going to beat him. It doesn't matter. Like, that's how I feel Lane Kiffin. I think it's going to be a closer game than the last time, just for the fact that I don't think FAU is going to be as prepared as they were the first time.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a lot here. I mean, and by this point in the show, you've heard me say a lot of it. But I kind of agree with you. I think that could be good and bad. Lane Kiffin's going to come out a certain way, and we need to be ready to exploit that, because there are weaknesses there. But, I mean, there's strengths. I mean, at its fundamental, like the fundamental philosophy, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, I agree with it, right? If they can't stop the play, then why are you going to pick another play? You know? Like, make them prove they can stop it.
Yeah. So getting back to prediction, I don't know if North Texas can block, you know, their front four. They had trouble with that last time. That really concerns me. Is, you know, I've always said that if we can protect the ball and protect Mason Fine, we can't be beat. And I think we'll protect them a little bit better. We'll protect the ball a little bit better, but not quite enough. And I think it'll be the under. I don't think it'll go some huge scoring game. I think it'll be like a 28, you know, 24 FAU wins. I think it'll be a good football game, though. I think it'll be a good football game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. All right, Greg, thanks for joining the show. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Take care, guys.